Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast with me, your host, Francesca, as always. So today I wanted to dive into a really important and quite honestly fascinating topic to me anyway, but it is actually a really important concept topic for any woman to understand as they, well, any time in life, but especially as we go through perimenopause, which is where your used estrogen actually goes once your body has finished using it. So once it goes round all of the different cells in the body and does its thing, it acts within those different cells to, for example, support our brain, our skin, our muscle, our various different organs, all of the different important jobs that it has to do, we need to get rid of that. We need to process that used estrogen. It doesn't just stay in the body. And there's a big process really that it goes through. It gets packaged up and sent out of the body, basically. And when that process isn't working efficiently, there can be lots of symptoms. So let's break down in the most simple human chatty way possible how it actually works and what we can do to support it, because it is really important to understand. And so the term estrogen detox, estrogen detoxification, estrogen metabolism, you might read this maybe online. There's could be various people using those terms. I certainly have and do. But whilst you might hear a particular term, it doesn't necessarily mean you understand it, or you know, you might just have a rough idea. But what I want in this episode is really just to break it down really simply. Estrogen metabolism, estrogen detoxification, it's all about the process that estrogen goes through once our body has used it and finished with it, because it cannot just hang around. So one of the biggest myths that, or misconceptions, I should say, that I hear in perimenopause is that estrogen is always declining. Once we get into perimenopause, it must mean we have low estrogen. And I've heard lots of women say, I can't be perimenopausal because my estrogen's high. And that's, again, a misconception, because there are different stages through the perimenopausal journey. It's one big, long phase that takes us from sort of regular menstruating years right up to menopause, going 12 months without having a period and then moving into that phase of menopause, postmenopause. So it's a long old phase. It takes, 10, 12 years. And in the beginning, and maybe even in the middle of the perimenopausal transition towards menopause, estrogen can actually be higher than it's ever been in your entire adult life. It's literally like that process is literally like puberty in reverse. Your brain is sort of from around mid-30s onwards, your brain's doing this like one final hurrah, this one final push for fertility as we move into these last however many years before menopause comes. And it sends these big dramatic signals to your ovaries during that time to say, come on, let's just go one more time. And that is, like I said, late 30s, early 40s. And that's actually why twins can be more common. They are more common in early perimenopause. So as women are in their 40s, it's more common that they'll have twins because the ovaries can release more than one egg because of these big hormonal surges that the brain is pushing onto the ovaries. So quickly to recap that, estrogen can be higher than ever been before in the early stages, the early phases of perimenopause. It can be what's known as dominant, in inverted commas, compared to progesterone. So what estrogen dominance means, it can be an annoying term. A lot of practitioners don't like it, but it doesn't mean that we have high estrogen necessarily, excess. We don't have estrogen in excess. When someone says estrogen dominance, what that term actually means is that estrogen is dominating the cycle. So relative to the hormone progesterone, which we should make and have in the luteal phase, the second half of our cycle, if we don't do that, if we don't make progesterone or we have low levels of progesterone, that means we have an estrogen dominant cycle, because we're supposed to have estrogen sort of dominate in the first half of the cycle, and then progesterone takes over to dominate the second half. That's hormone balance. If we don't have progesterone, which is only made as a result of ovulation, in the second half of the cycle, we have an estrogen dominant cycle. So that is one of the most common situations in perimenopause, because we start to ovulate less and less months than we did before. So we have more what's called estrogen dominant cycles, which doesn't necessarily mean excess, as I said, but we can also have estrogen excess on top of that, which can create, they're both slightly different scenarios, but the symptoms can all feel very similar. Bloating, so menstrual bloating, heavy periods, maybe very heavy with clots, breast pain or breast tenderness in the lead up to your period, headaches, migraines, mood swings, irritability, all of this in the lead up to your period, big emotional dysregulation, feeling tired but wired. Those are the sort of main either estrogen dominant and or estrogen excess symptoms that we can experience. And these are typical during perimenopause. But high estrogen isn't always the villain here. This is what, with these sorts of symptoms, some people or practitioners even can assume: this person must have high estrogen. It could be the case. It may or not be the case. What matters over and above the amount of estrogen is how your body processes it, what your body does with it after it's been used. So that's what we're talking about today. And I've done previous episodes on estrogen, what's happening with estrogen in perimenopause, specifically the roller coaster, the excess, the domination of it, like all the different sort of scenarios. So you can go back and listen to those separately. But today's topic is what happens to your estrogen once you're done with it. Because like I said, whatever the level, this is the most important thing to be focusing on, really. You know, even postmenopause, we still want to make sure that we are able to properly detoxify the small amount of estrogen that we have. And even more so if we're on hormone therapy, if we're using body identical estrogen therapy, we again need to be making sure that we can detoxify it efficiently. And in some cases where women are on hormone therapy, estradiol, you know, gel, patch, for example, if they say, you know, if I'm on the hormone therapy, but I'm not feeling better or I'm feeling worse, and they'll either increase or decrease their dose. But actually, if we look at how they're detoxifying it and we actually support those processes, which is supporting the liver and the gut, basically, maybe their dose is okay, but it's how they're detoxifying it that's causing a problem. So let's have a look at that. So detoxification, first of all, is not a juice cleanse. It's not a juice fast. It's not fasting. It is literally your liver and gut working biochemical magic. And fasting and juicing is not how we support these things, I promise. So anything you ever see that's claiming to be a detox that tells you not to eat or to fast with juices, please stay away and avoid. So the simple version is that your liver packages up your used estrogen. So your used estrogen goes to the liver, and in there, there's various processes where your liver packages it up into safer forms. This is known as estrogen metabolism. You're metabolizing, breaking down the used estrogen into three different metabolites, so breakdown products of the used estrogen, which are safer forms, to then be sent. They go through another process after that to make them ready to go off to the liver, the gut, sorry, where they are waiting to be eliminated permanently from the body through a bowel movement. So that is the most simple version of what happens to our estrogen once we use it. So that's the ideal scenario. But if your liver doesn't have the nutrients, these would be known as cofactors, so supportive nutrients that it needs, or that your gut microbiome is imbalanced, disrupted, not enough good friendly bacteria, too much unfriendly bacteria, and so on. Or, and and or constipation is a thing for you. So if either of that, you know, liver doesn't have its cofactor nutrients, gut microbiome is imbalanced, constipation. And by constipation, I don't mean like a week without going to the toilet. I mean a day. We need to be going every day at least once for a fully formed, letting out a fully formed stool. If any of those things are not happening properly, then that used estrogen can actually be recirculated back into your system. It goes back into your body, into circulation. This gives you a second unwanted dose of estrogen. This is the estrogen that's been used, and we need it to leave the body, not stay, not come back in. So if that does happen, it makes symptoms worse. So again, heavy periods, painful periods, breast pain, mood issues, headaches, migraines. Now, these can be due to other things, but this is just what this situation of unwanted estrogen coming back into the body would cause or worsen. So let's talk about what helps keep this process smooth and supported. So this is where lifestyle and nutrition become really powerful tools for everyone to use. So firstly, cruciferous vegetables. These are really, really helpful, and they're very easy to just include in your day-to-day diet. So things like broccoli, kale, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower, watercress, rocket. These vegetables contain three types of different compounds that help your liver to detoxify estrogen down the safer pathway, which I'm not going to get into in this episode, because it's just, you just really need this like top line breakdown of it. Just know that these vegetables are, this family of vegetables support the proper, efficient and safe breakdown of estrogen in the liver. So I mentioned earlier, we break down our used estrogen to three different metabolites, breakdown products of estrogen. One of those is very more preferred. We want most of our estrogen, like 80% of it, to go down that particular pathway. It's called the 2OH pathway. And so cruciferous vegetables are really great at supporting, pushing down that pathway. Gives your liver a little nudge in the right direction, basically. So if you're having, you know, when you're having salads, just make sure, you know, quite an easy switch, if you're not already doing it, that your base, your salad base leaves are rocket and watercress and other ones if you like them, but get the rocket and watercress in there because they're the cruciferous family. And then, you know, the foundation of your sort of stir fry veg or, you know, steamed veg, whatever, however you like to have your veg in different ways through the week, even in salads, if you just gently steam fry, stir fry vegetables to throw into salads through the week, just make them broccoli, like I said, cabbage, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, red and green cabbage, kale. You can use kale in salads as well. And then broccoli sprouts. So you can buy broccoli sprouts in health food shops. They come in a little container and they're sort of like cress. So you can just throw them onto salads. You can throw them into smoothies. You can throw them on top of your other meals and just mix them through. And what these contain is a compound called sulforaphane, which we'll also get from broccoli, from cauliflower. Once we chop those vegetables, the chopping of them sort of releases the sulforaphane. But broccoli sprouts is a much more concentrated source, basically, of sulforaphane. So sulforaphane is one of the three important compounds I mentioned that cruciferous vegetables have. It's DIM, indole-3 carbonyl, which has actually been shown to be protective against estrogen-driven cancers. So another reason to have these wonderful vegetables. And the other one is sulforaphane. So the broccoli sprouts are concentrated in sulforaphane. They're sort of supercharged cruciferous veg. Sulforaphane is one of the most powerful compounds for supporting the second phase of liver's estrogen detoxification process. So we have the first phase, which is the used estrogen breaking down into three different metabolites, breakdown products. And then that second phase, which is getting those breakdown products ready to go into the gut, basically, to leave the body permanently. That's what happens afterwards. Now, even a tablespoon a day of broccoli sprouts can make a difference. So like I said, you can buy them. You can also make them at home on your own if you have access to a window where you can leave your little sprouts to grow once you've started the process. That's really helpful. So just YouTube it, how to make them. They're really simple to make if you can be bothered. Otherwise, you could buy them. The next thing is flaxseed and phytoestrogen food. So flaxseed is my perimenopause superstar. I've been using flaxseed for years and years and years anyway, way before perimenopause, but I just love this. So you want to grind your flax seeds. You never want to eat them whole because they're so tiny. They're just going to pass right through. So you want to grind them. Ideally, we buy them whole and then we grind them ourselves like once or twice a week in a coffee grinder or something, and just keep them in an airtight container in the fridge. That's the ideal way. If we buy them ground, which you can if you have to, but if you buy them ground, they're not, you know, as fresh. We kind of want to grind them ourselves, use them up within a few days, then grind another lot, use them up within a few days. I like to use a tablespoon a day in, like, it could be sprinkled on top of a salad, sprinkled on top, like mixed into a food so you wouldn't even notice them, or in a smoothie. They contain something called lignans. So lignans in flaxseed bind to excess estrogen or bind to estrogen essentially in the gut and help you get it out. And they're also just a great source of fiber to keep the bowel regular. And then phytoestrogens. So these are, phyto means plant. So these are sort of plant estrogens. They are not estrogen. There is, again, a misconception that phytoestrogen foods will put estrogen into the body. They will not. The only thing that would do that is your body identical hormone therapy. But phytoestrogens are kind of like estrogen adaptogens. So they adapt to the situation. If it's high, if it's low, they can produce this adaptogenic sort of, effect in the body with regards to symptoms. So like I said, they can't increase or decrease your actual estrogen, but they can have this nice balancing effect on symptoms, whether that's because if you've got the symptoms of excess or the symptoms of low estrogen. So they're a great food to include, especially from things, or only really from unprocessed soy. So we want to use edamame beans, fresh, you know, frozen edamame beans, and the unprocessed soy would be tofu, organic non-GMO tofu, or tempeh, a fermented version of tofu. Any other soy, you really want to avoid any soy milk, soy yogurt, soy protein. These are not, or soy mince or meat replacement, meat substitutes that have been made with soy. This is not the unprocessed soy that contains the quality phytoestrogen effects. Some people can be a bit scared of phytoestrogens. They think, oh no, is it going to increase my estrogen? But no, it just has a balancing effect, particularly symptoms wise. So yes, they are your friend. And then let's have a look at things that disrupt estrogen balance. So the other side of the coin is something what we call endocrine disrupting chemicals, basically fake estrogens that come in from the outside world. This is not the same as your hormone therapy. If you are using or thinking of using body identical estradiol, like the gel or the patch, that is a body identical form of the estrogen that we would make from our ovaries. But what I'm talking about here is fake estrogens from the outside world. So they're chemically not the same, but the cells in the body do recognize it as real estrogen, even though it's not. And unfortunately, the cells will allow that fake estrogens so to come in to the cell and act, but they don't act in the way that real estrogen would and should act. They do other naughty things. So yeah, they're called endocrine disrupting chemicals. I've got a separate episode on this. If you've not listened to it before, I'm going to link that into the show notes so you can understand them a bit more. But basically they are found, these sorts of various different chemicals, there's loads of them, and they have been shown to disrupt the endocrine system because they impact the communication of our hormones, the balance of our hormones, and the production of our hormones as well. So that's what endocrine disrupting chemicals means. So they're found in plastics, for example. They're found in resins that you would find on tins or coffee cups, takeaway cups, drinking from the lid and with the lid on, for example. Various skincare, makeup, household cleaning products, perfumes, anything that's scented, candles, synthetic candles, all the sort of synthetic scents. It sounds like, oh my goodness, what am I supposed to do? Just run off and live on some commune somewhere with just everything natural. You know, that's not the world that the modern world that we live in, but there is so much that we can do to start reducing our exposure to these fake chemicals. So these fake estrogens, So, for example, simply don't heat or store your food in plastics. Don't even put your plastics in the dishwasher. Just hand wash them with regular room temperature water, for example. If you heat the plastics, particularly in a dishwasher like that, such high heat, the chemicals can leach from the plastic. And then that can be in our foods. So don't, if you're heating up food in the oven or the microwave, put it onto a ceramic plate before you heat it up, you know, if you're at work or something or at home. Don't store your water in plastic bottles. Get a, stainless steel bottle to use for your water. Don't put oily or hot foods into plastic containers as well. So try to use all your Tupperware, make it glass. There's plenty of really good budget-friendly options now. We can sort of buy them on Amazon. They're in TK Maxx. They have all these, you know, so we can get our hands on IKEA. So it just needs to have, the lid can be plastic. And then the actual Tupperware just needs to be glass. And then if you're heating it, you just take the plastic lid off. So you're not actually heating with the plastic, but you're storing that food in glass. It'd be preferable if the lid wasn't plastic, but, you know, that's okay if it has to be, if that's all you can find. And, you know, even with things like tinned fish, try to, if you're buying tinned mackerel, tinned tuna, for example, tinned sardines, get it in water or brine as opposed to the oil. Because if it's sat in the oil, the oil can soak up some of the chemical from the resin of the tin, and then you've got that in your food. So yeah, just get tinned fish and things with in water or brine instead, and switch gradually over to toxin, chemical-free skincare, makeup, household cleaning products, detergents, just as and when one product runs out, see if you can look into a different brand. So there's lots of different brands out there now, like chemical-free, but I like brands like Bio-D for household cleaning products. Skincare, you've got things like Tropic Skincare, Aesop's a little bit pricey, but it's really good stuff and it's clean. Green People, there's lots of different brands out there that you can look into. You can use an app called the Yuka app, Y-U-K-A, and you scan. It's great for the UK. There's one called Think Dirty, which is better for US-based. But the Yuka app's brilliant. There is a paid version, but I believe the free version could work good enough. I think I pay something like £10 a year for the app. And you get to scan barcodes of all your different products. If it doesn't have a barcode, just type it in and it will give you a rating, green, amber, red, and explain what the different chemicals are inside. So great app to use to know which brands are good and start to figure out which brands are just a no-go. So if you went into Boots, for example, or another high street shop and you scanned the products in there, it'd be really hard to find something that's green. The high street stuff is just, you know, your regular commercial products that we get on the high street tend to be full of chemicals. But you might be surprised if you walk around Boots one day and do loads of scanning that you might find one that's green. And then you'll get to learn, okay, which brands you just need to stay away from and which are okay. And these changes might seem small, but they really do add up over time in terms of supporting your body to healthily manage and handle its used estrogen and prevent all these fake ones from getting in. And it'll have a big impact on over time on how you feel and your overall hormone health. So it's definitely worth doing. And then we also want to think about getting our lymph moving. So the lymphatic system is part of your detoxification network, but unlike your blood, it doesn't have a pump. It literally, the lymphatic system literally relies on you to get it moving. And that's literally through regular movement. So especially if you have a desk job, make notes to get up every so often, at least every hour, to get out of your chair, walk around. Maybe if you're working from home, have a mat laid out and do some movement, do some stretches, do some a gentle yoga flow, just dance, run around, you know, whatever it is you can do, just get moving, walk often, bounce, get a little mini rebounder. So you can just jump on it for 30 seconds. I've got one by my desk. I actually haven't used it in a long time. I need to start doing that a bit more. Do some twists, you know, like yoga twisty poses. Some qigong, other stretching. I body brushing as well before a shower. Again, I have a body brush. I just don't use it. I haven't used it for ages, but kind of reminding myself to do these things. So a little bit of body brushing before, like while you're waiting for the shower to heat up, just brush. Yeah, I think you have to brush towards the heart. Just do that for a few minutes before you get in the shower. Even just 5 minutes at a time of any sort of movement, body brushing can be really helpful. It is really helpful. It all adds up, has a compound effect. If estrogen can't be transported out of the body effectively, then it's just not going to be eliminated effectively, and we are going to end up with this sort of build-up that we just don't want. So that's your mini masterclass on what actually happens to estrogen once you're done with it and how to support your body in processing it properly. I hope it's been helpful and it's offered some sort of simple, quick things that you can start to add into your life, make it part of your regular behaviour. Estrogen isn't our enemy. What matters is its balance, how we metabolize it, and how we get it out of the body. So I hope this has been helpful. If it's resonated or you'd just like more support with your hormones, your gut, your detox pathways, you can always dive deeper with me inside the Midlife Thrive membership, and or you might want to explore my Dutch testing package one-to-one. This is where we I basically do a big full case history of yours. Once you complete your intake forms, we send you off, we get you a Dutch test kit sent to your house. You do the Dutch test, I get the results sent back, I put together a whole report for you, and then we have a 75 minute consultation to go through that and your next steps. So let me know if you, well, the link in the show notes for that and the Midlife Thrive membership, or you can contact me by email or on DMs on Instagram, and we can talk about it there. All of that information will be in the show notes. So thank you for listening, and I will see you in the next episode. Bye-bye. If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.